Hello, everyone, and welcome in to CrushTheStreet.com. I'm Kenneth Amadori. I'm joined today with a brand new guest, and you know we're going to be covering the election today and kind of the dynamics of what's going on in politics. And as all of you know, as it pertains to money, politics is very relevant to the economy. And you know that's what I'm mostly concerned about. And so to discuss with this everything today, Alex Newman is on the line. His website is thenewamerican.com. He's a solid journalist. He's a speaker. He's very articulate and very fact-based. And I'm happy to pick his brain today. We're recording the day after the election, depending on when you listen to this. But without any further ado, Alex, thanks for coming on the line with me today.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Kenneth. I really appreciate the opportunity. And it's great to have some time with you. So thank you.
Alex, so I'd like to get your thoughts on the election, the results. You know, Democrats seem to be taking what they were able to get as a victory, you know, with the House. It is what it is. You know, there was no real blue wave, in my opinion. But, you know, was this what they were hoping for? Were they really hoping for something bigger, in your opinion?
I think they were hoping for massive gains, and I don't think they got them. In fact, you know, my home state of Florida, I'm from Florida originally, you know, they were predicting that this communist Andrew Gillum was going to win, and that didn't happen. They were predicting that Bill Nelson, their, you know, almost senile, longtime loyal Democrat Party hack, would win again, and he actually lost to Rick Scott, who, you know, the guy's not even super popular. He's been the governor for a while, but he's not, you know, somebody with a massive fan club like, say, Ron Paul or something. And so he took down one of the Democrats' reliable votes in the Senate. In fact, the Republicans gained a few seats in the Senate, and that was expected. So this is not you know, some kind of big rebuke of Trump. And I think there's also the issue that the establishment media doesn't want to discuss, and that is the widespread reports of voter fraud, of illegal immigrants voting, of funky stuff happening with the machines. You know, I think this has been going on for so many years now. The Democrats have been playing fast and loose with the election system. And so I think to some extent, even the gains that they did get are suspicious. They need to be called into question. I know there's now the governor of Texas now announced they're going to be launching an official investigation. They had Texas election officials openly caught on camera telling immigrants who aren't legally allowed to vote, DACA recipients, to go ahead and vote. Oh, we got tons of them. No worries. And, you know, we know that the overwhelming majority of them are voting for the Democratic Party. We know that dead people have been voting for the Democratic Party over and over again. So I don't think this is what they hoped for. I think it was not quite a repeat of 2016 where, you know, their hopes and dreams and all of their delusions went up in smoke in one go. But it's certainly not what they were hoping for. So
in 2010, you know, we had this massive Republican swing, and many would have called it a backlash against maybe, you know, what we had in office, you know, President Obama and leftist policies. You know, they flipped, what, like 60 seats. And there was a large Tea Party movement and a lash out. And, you know, I really think that they failed to factor in Trump in this election. I mean, what Trump brought to the table. It wasn't so much people voting for these specific Republicans, but, I mean, Trump campaigning at these rallies, drawing crowds of, you know, 30, 50,000, and then, you know, tens of thousands of people standing outside. I mean, you know, so I say this is, you know, why wasn't this covered more? I mean, how was it possible that, you know, Gillum, for instance, in many of the polls was up by large margins? I mean, it was supposed to be, you know, an easy victory for him in Florida, but it wasn't. You know, what's being missed by the, you know, leftist media?
You know, I think the problem is they're not actually reporting to inform people. They're reporting so-called, and in fact, they're engaged in activism and deception to try to mislead people and to try to manipulate people. So they're not starting with truth, and we need to figure out how to convey this truth to the audience. They're starting out with, here's our agenda. How do we manipulate the audience into supporting it? Now, you know, the good news is that they've failed incredibly spectacular. I mean, I think this is unprecedented in human history that the organs of information dissemination have lost all credibility with the public. I mean, this is just, you know, this is kind of like on par with what we were seeing in the Soviet Union. You know, people would read the fake newspaper, but everybody knew it was a lie. And I think we're almost approaching that in the United States. If you look at the polls, one of the ones that I saw after Trump was elected showed that 6% of Americans trust the media. Less than one third say they have any trust in the media. Among Republicans, that's less than 15%. So at this point, you know, if the press were to tell you that the sun came up, you'd have to go, you know, to the window and make sure that was actually true, because they cannot be trusted for anything. And I think these last few elections revealed this. And, you know, I think one of the other things that the media missed, they're trying to act like these minor little victories for the Democratic Party were some big rebuke of Trump and what he stands for, his anti-globalist platform, his platform of getting rid of regulations and trying to, you know, contain the size and the scope of government. One of the big things they missed is that Americans, many of them, are just disgusted with the Republican Party, too. You know, just take most recently the Planned Parenthood issue. It's just such an obvious one. Basically, everybody running for office as a Republican at the federal level said, we're going to quit funding Planned Parenthood with your tax money. It was a big selling point for social conservatives. You know, even people who are okay with abortion don't like funding it with their tax dollars. They don't like Planned Parenthood shoveling millions of our tax dollars into Democrat campaign coffers. And yet, they just passed another budget right before the election, fully funding Planned Parenthood. I mean, we could have elected Democrats and gotten the same thing. They busted through the previous records on spending. So a big part of the problem, and I personally know multiple Republicans and Christians and conservatives who just stayed home. They said, you know what? It doesn't make any difference. Planned Parenthood is going to get funding anyways. The government is going to keep growing anyways. We're not going to get a wall. And so I think the media is really missing the story. They're trying to spin this phony narrative, and it's falling flat. And I think little by little, you know, the American people are getting accurate information through alternative sources. And I think this has massive implications for the future.
So, Alex, I'm curious then, as some of the things you said, you know, Republicans not doing their job or not representing, you know, conservative values in many ways, what does it mean now that we have, you know, a Democratic controlled Congress or House of Representatives, and how is that going to play into gridlock in DC and, you know, maybe the 10% additional tax cut for the middle class, the wall that you brought up, and, you know, now they're talking about Trump investigations. You know, how do you see this effectively playing out now for the next couple years?
You know, I think the Democrats are going to do everything they can to try to sabotage Trump's agenda as it was articulated on the campaign trail. You know, what really motivated Americans to go out and vote? Stopping globalism, stopping the rise at taxpayer expense in America of the mass murdering dictatorship in China. For example, the mass immigration. You know, all these things that animated American voters to go out to the polls. The Democrats and big parts of the Republican establishment, and I very much include House Speaker Paul Ryan, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, although he's kind of been brought to a heel a little bit more than Paul Ryan. You know, they're all on the same page on this. So I think what we're going to be seeing is an intensification of the establishment's war on Donald Trump, of the deep state's war on Donald Trump. And I think they would love to try impeachment. I think they'll probably do polls and see, you know, how that might play with the voters. But I think we're going to see a lot of investigations. I think they're going to try to do everything and anything they can to sabotage his agenda, which, you know, they were doing before, just not very successfully. It seems that Trump has outsmarted them repeatedly. Very likely some more investigations. And, you know, I was talking to Roger Stone, who's been one of Trump's very close advisors since the 1980s. It's actually the guy who convinced him to run for president. He was saying that the deep state, if you will, hates Trump with such a passion that, you know, if they can't get him out with Robert Mueller with this phony investigation, if they can't declare him crazy and remove him under the 25th Amendment, and if they can't impeach him, then we may well see, you know, even more extreme measures, potentially including, you know, what they did with John F. Kennedy. So I think, you know, Trump, to the extent that he's sticking to his agenda of stopping globalism, stopping communist China, making America great again, legitimately, right, smashing globalism, to the extent that he actually does those things, he puts himself in great danger. And I think he understands that. I think a lot of his advisors understand that. And I think the Democrats will do everything they can to make his life miserable. The fact that he still has a Republican majority in the Senate should help a lot, right? They can't stop his nominations for cabinet positions. They can't stop his judges. And so that'll be very helpful. But I think there's going to be a lot of phony investigations. They're going to try to drag all the cabinet officials in for subpoenas and committee hearings to try to get sound bites that they can play over and over again. So to that extent, I think Trump is going to be really playing on defense for a while. But, you know, the Democrats are not going to be able to pass a budget without Trump's signature. And hopefully the fact that Democrats are now in charge of the House will motivate Trump to whip out that veto pen. And when one of these ridiculous budgets, you know, to quote him, this ridiculous budget that the Republicans passed, when one of these monstrosities arrives on his desk, he'll say, you know what, this is garbage and it's going to be vetoed. You guys go back and cut spending. You take the funding out for Planned Parenthood. You put some in for the wall, and then we'll keep the government funded. Otherwise, you can explain to the American people why the government is shut down.
So, Alex, Trump takes a lot of grief for, especially in communities like ours, you know, the alternative media, who, you know, are very altruistic in our beliefs about sound money and really not being beholden to these globalists and these elite people. But I see Trump as somebody who does what he needs to do to, you know, move things along, be practical, but gets in many ways all of the different variables and deals with them. I think, you know, trade is an example of that. A lot of libertarians really hate the fact that, you know, he's starting these trade wars, but, you know, I see it as political posturing. I mean, he, you know, he's got a lot of different things that he's doing that is not binary. It's not just black and white that he's having to deal with. And I think he doesn't get the credit that he deserves for the position that he's in to advance, you know, the country forward. I mean, it's just so many millions of different pieces that he's got to juggle. So, you know, having said that, to what extent has Trump worked with the globalists? And do you feel like he is beholden to these globalists? I know you kind of alluded to that he's not, but, you know, maybe you can talk about that a little bit.
Sure. Well, you know, I appreciate the opportunity to do that. And I think this is such an important question. And, you know, I'll admit, I've kind of gone back and forth on this question. Trump will do something like, you know, when he first launched those missiles at Syria, I was like, no, oh my goodness, what's happening here? This is not the Trump we elected. And then, you know, once the dust settled, it was just a, you know, a loose missile landed on an empty airfield somewhere. Nothing happened. CNN got to say he looks so presidential. The neocons got to lap it up. And then that was the end of it. You know, then they cried because they didn't get more war. One of the things that I am very concerned about right now, vis-a-vis the globalists, is this U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement. I mean, this thing, according to the head of the Council on Foreign Relations, which is one of the premier, if not the premier, deep state globalist institutions here in the United States, the head of this organization said this was NAFTA plus TPP plus 10 or 20%, and we ought to pass it immediately. So, you know, Trump's U.S. trade representative, Robert Lighthizer, is a member of this globalist Council on Foreign Relations. And, you know, that becomes, I think, very problematic. But is Trump actually going to go to bat for this? I don't know. We'll have to see. If he does, I think that opens up some very serious questions. But if we look at his actions, right, I would say actions speak louder than words, and I agree. What has he done since he took office? Well, right away, he smashed the TPP, right? You had the Republican establishment behind that. You had the Democrat establishment behind that. You had the globalists behind it, the media behind it. Trump came in and ripped it out by the roots that we're not doing it. He has withdrawn from so many UN agencies and organizations and agreements. I've lost track. You know, we got out of the UN Human Rights Council. We're withdrawing from the UN Paris Agreement. We're withdrawing from UNESCO, the UN's education agency that wants to brainwash all the kids all over the world. Where we withdrew from the Global Compact on Migration, which was going to globalize immigration policy. And, you know, we told the International Criminal Court, you try to bring an American before that court, we're going to prosecute you, we're going to freeze your assets in the United States, and you're going to regret the day that the American's name came out of your mouth. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, this is like a wrecking ball to the institutions of globalism. And I think the globalists themselves realize this. They're kind of in a panic. And, you know, again, actions speak louder than words. Trump's words have been fantastic, right? Even on this trade issue, you know, I know, like you mentioned, a good number of libertarians, especially more establishment-minded libertarians, have said, oh my goodness, Trump is ruining trade, and he wants a trade war and all the rest of it. I think they need to listen carefully to what Trump is saying, because I think Trump is right. This is not an issue about free trade. Trump supports trade, and he said that very clearly. But what he doesn't support is a rigged system, a system that was designed by globalists for the purpose of merging the world's nations together under a single global system, and at the same time, bringing America down to the level of other countries. Because what we have is not free trade. All the libertarians out there need to understand, you're being misled by establishment libertarians. NAFTA was never about free trade. The World Trade Organization is not about free trade. These are about building the institutions of global governance. And you know, who's going to argue that thousands of pages of arcane regulations and transnational tribunals and kangaroo courts and bureaucracies are free trade? That's the opposite of free trade. We can trade with people just fine without setting up international bureaucracies and international courts and surrendering our sovereignty, surrendering congressional jurisdiction over these matters that the Constitution quite properly hands to Congress. And, you know, speaking on China in particular, Trump has said that this is a rigged system. He's absolutely right. I mean, this system was designed to ship our productive capacity to China, to ship our jobs to China, to ship our manufacturing to China. We're at the point now where we can't even keep a lot of our Air Force planes in the sky without parts from communist China. Now, what would happen if we ever went to war? What would happen if the communist Chinese wanted to pressure us and say, well, you know what? You just can't have any more parts for your aircraft planes. What are we going to do? Right. So I think Trump is laser focused on these very crucial issues. I think establishment libertarians need to, you know, get their head out of their ideology and look at the facts, right? The free trade system as it exists today is not libertarian at all. And I sympathize with libertarianism. I called myself a libertarian for many years. But I think what Trump is doing is protecting the United States. I mean, you're not going to have any liberty if the United States goes down, right? And I think Trump understands that there are forces arrayed against the United States that would bring us down, that would bring our economy down, that would bring down our constitution, our ability to govern ourselves, our ability to be free. And I think he is laser focused on the existential threats in terms of stopping the North. So I refer again to mass migration, right? The reason the globalists are obsessed with the open borders, the reason that they are deliberately organizing massive moves of people from nations that do not share our culture, that do not share our history, that do not share our language, that do not share anything that defines Americans or even Western Christian civilization. You see it even more advanced in Europe. The reason is not because they're humanitarian. I mean, if you look at the refugee question, for example, the countries that these people are fleeing from typically are countries where the globalists have blown them up, right? I mean, for me, I use an analogy. If I went to somebody's house and burned it down and then invited them into your house and said, you're going to take care of them, that would make me the opposite of a humanitarian. And that's exactly what these globalists have done. The reason why they do that is to undermine national identity and undermine freedom. And in fact, they're doing this very effectively. So Trump is working on the border, working on the mass migration, working on communist China and the threat it poses to our sovereignty, to our economy, to our jobs and our manufacturing. And finally, working on dismantling the globalist system that has been built up over a period of generations. And if you look at the U.S. government as this kind of, you know, I use the analogy of like a massive cruise ship, right, sailing through the sea. It has millions of moving parts, right? It's got millions of employees that need to be managed. It has momentum like we can't even imagine. And for him to just come there and within 2 years for us to expect that he's going to have the whole thing flipped around and flying in the other direction is ludicrous, right? He's got the media against him. He's got his own bureaucrats. The massive overwhelming majority of his own bureaucrats are against him. He's got the establishment Republicans in Congress. He's got the Democrats. So I think personally what he's done in 2 years, I mean, overall, as I was saying, I'm really impressed with what he's been able to accomplish in 2 years with all these forces arrayed against him. I have, you know, obviously these concerns, and I think, you know, as sensible people, we need to support him when he's right and oppose him when he's wrong. But overall, I'm very pleased with what he's been doing, and I hope we get another 6 years of turning the tide on all these crucial issues.
So, Alex, I don't know if the stats are this high. I don't know, you know, the black vote apparently is what, up to like 40% support for Trump. I'm not sure if that's true or not. But my question is, you know, the media, the left media really wants to paint this picture where it's white America versus minorities. And you know, they have these minorities voting in blocks, you know, for Democrats and immigrants. But my question is, do you foresee things changing, you know, 10, 15, 20 years down the line, especially as these immigrants, you know, become second, third, fourth generation Americans? you know, having more of an ownership over the country and not just voting as you know, someone who just wants something from this collective society.
You know, I absolutely see that happening. You're right. The Democrats have this kind of racist ideology that Black people have these interests and they're going to vote for us. Hispanic people have these interests and they're going to vote for us. And, you know, frankly, I think that's extremely racist to think of people as these collective entities that all have the same desires and goals and political views. I mean, that's just absolutely ludicrous. And it's not true, right? If the facts don't bear it out. I do think now we're coming to a time where more and more Native-born Americans, whether they be Black or whether they have Hispanic parents or whatever, are coming to realize what a horrible scam this is. You know, I see it when I'm in Florida. I see more and more of that happening. You know, you mentioned the poll of the 40% Black support for President Trump. I think that's probably going to keep increasing as people realize, you know, the disaster that the Democratic Party's policies have been for their communities. And you know, I think that's why they're so anxious to bring in massive amounts of immigrants and give them all amnesty and voting rights as quickly as possible, because they recognize that as people get assimilated, as people become Americans, as people learn about the Constitution and the blessings of liberty and you know, the foundational ideas behind America, they become more American. And so then they're not going to go out and just say, well, I want free stuff from these evil Americans. And I think what we're seeing here is the Democratic Party has a strategy. And I use the Democratic Party kind of loosely, because really we're talking about forces that have taken control of the Democratic Party. And they're certainly not isolated to the Democratic Party, but they're pushing this narrative that evil, white, racist Americans have perpetrated all these crimes. And so everything that we can associate with them, like the Constitution, like Western civilization, like liberty, all these things, then we can paint those as racist and evil by extension and tear them all down. And so that's why you see this narrative in the government schools, for example. They say, well, you know, the people who wrote the Constitution had slaves, and therefore the Constitution is evil. Therefore, the ideas in the Constitution and in the Declaration of Independence are evil. Therefore, we should start over again with, you know, a new world order. And this is first of all, it's phony. It's, I mean, completely phony. The narrative relies on lies, and therefore truth is a very good antidote to it, right? When you explain to people that basically every human civilization and culture and society throughout history has had slavery, and it was Western American and Anglo-Saxon culture in particular that decided, hey, not only are we going to end this, we're going to end it for the whole world, then people start to think about this differently, right? And so when you demolish these lies with truth, not only do you neutralize the narrative, you bring in more allies. You get people who buy into the American idea, the idea of liberty, the idea of Western civilization as it's developed over the centuries, who are not white and who recognize that these things are not inherently white either, right? It's the goal of the deep state, of the Democrats, of the establishment, if you will, is to divide people and to tear down the institutions that have protected our liberty for, you know, centuries at this point. And the really positive thing we have going for us, again, is that the truth is an incredibly powerful weapon. Yeah, they've got billions of dollars and they've got all the propaganda machines, but nobody believes their propaganda machine anymore. And the truth is much more powerful than their billions of dollars. So I think they're losing the battle slowly. You know, where we need to focus, I think, is really on the education system, because that is kind of their secret weapon, right? They figure if we can successfully brainwash even 75% of the 90% of the children that we have in the government school system, you know, that's a big enough voting block that we can move our agenda forward. And so that's where we really need to be focusing, is getting the kids educated on economics, on liberty, on philosophy, on history, so that we can neutralize this agenda. So I think that's really where the big threat is mass importation of people who haven't had a chance to assimilate, and the government dumbing down and indoctrinating children in government schools.
You know, I think a fair and honest question for many people is, are you pro-America or are you pro, you know, putting other countries and the people of other countries in front of Americans here? Because if the answer to that is yes or no, it's really going to make your decision as to how you feel about people violating our laws to get into the country. And, you know, because we try to argue, oh, we're just want to be kind and compassionate to other people. But if you take a step back and say, what are the consequences of this? You know, how should this be done in a way that's going to be good for the country? And if you're for a yes answer that you are pro-America, you have to answer that in a certain way. But if you don't care about that, you might be sympathetic to these reckless immigration policies. And I think that's a difficult thing to extrapolate and to break down, especially to a population that, you know, doesn't largely look into these things at a really deep level and think about the deferred gratification, the long-term build-out of a sound fundamental country. So maybe some thoughts on this.
I mean, absolutely. I think that's the real struggle here, is to educate people on these critical factors. You know, I boil this all down to two things where we need to educate the American public. And, you know, more and more people, I think, understand these things, but not enough to ensure that we're going to have a solid foundation to, you know, perpetuate our country and our freedoms. Now, Sun Tzu used to say, you know, if you know yourself and you know your enemy, you're going to win every battle, right? Whereas if you know yourself and not your enemy, you might win one and lose one. If you know your enemy but not yourself, you win one and lose one. If you don't know either, you're totally toast, right? And so what I say is we need to teach the American people about themselves. You know, what is your heritage? What is your history? What is the truth about what the founders were trying to do? What did they really write in the Declaration of Independence? Not the baloney that you read in your, you know, fake seventh grade civics or history textbook. What did they really do? You know, why did they really do these things? Who were they really? So we need to teach the American people again about themselves. What does the Constitution actually say, right? I would wager to say that most Americans are clueless about the Constitution, right? I mean, separation of church and state, abortion, you know, they just have a totally distorted picture of what it does, how it operates. They don't understand that it creates a republic that is designed to limit the power of government for the purpose of protecting our God-given liberties, as it's written in the Declaration of Independence. I mean, there's very little understanding of that among, you know, mainstream society, if you will. And so that's one of the first areas where we got to work. We got to make sure the American people understand themselves, their history, their heritage, their constitution, because otherwise we'll fritter it all away and not even realize what we're missing, what we're losing. And I think that's crucial. Then on the other hand, we need to recognize that there is an enemy, if you will, that hopes to, you know, to be blunt about it, enslave us, to take away our freedom, to take away our prosperity, and to bring us under what these guys constantly run around talking about as the New World Order, right? If you doubt it, just type New World Order into YouTube and you can watch George Bush and Bill Clinton and Joe Biden and all the rest of Henry Kissinger, David Cameron, the Prime Minister of the UK, blabbering about how we're going to move into this New World Order. And they tell you what it is, right? It's a global government where you're not going to have your nation, you're not going to have your ability to govern yourselves, you're not going to have your gun rights or your free speech rights or your ability to choose the education of your children or the ability to start your own business and manage it in the way you see fit or the ability to own your own farm and run it as you see fit. So we need to recognize that there is this enemy that wants to take these things away from us, and we need to understand it. And so one of the things we did in the New American Magazine, we put together an entire special issue exposing what we call the deep state, only because this term now has entered, you know, the popular lexicon. The last poll I saw on it showed that 75% of Americans were concerned about the deep state. And so right now we have this amazing opportunity where, because of what President Trump has done and because we've reached this tipping point in the media's loss of credibility, people are starting to recognize now that there are powers behind the scenes that are trying to manipulate policy, that are trying to hijack our government, that are trying to control us without us having any say in elections. So if we can educate the American people on who we are, who we were, where we came from, and who is trying to steal all that from us, I think we have it made. Now, that's the challenge, is how do we get that done, especially when we're fighting, you know, as just one example, a $1 trillion per year government indoctrination system that specifically exists to make sure that nobody ever figures out who we are, who we were, what we were supposed to be, or what we're facing. And, but again, to go back to what I said a little bit earlier, we have this massive advantage in this fight, which is why I'm glad I'm on the right side of this, is we have the truth on our side. So we don't need the propaganda machine and the trillions of dollars to lie to people. The truth is very, very powerful. So I think we need to educate people on those things. And I think if we don't, the consequences will be cataclysmic. But if we succeed, you know, we can have this kind of new, amazing era of liberty and productivity and prosperity and you know, a restoration of the family and of real education and real art. I mean, just, you know, think of the possibilities if we could be a free society once again. So, you know, there is light at the end of the tunnel if we all work really hard. It's not going to be an easy job. We're up against some, you know, pretty serious obstacles, but there's, you know, good motivation to keep doing what we're doing.
Alex Newman, everyone, while you're doing a great job with the work that you put out, if people want to learn more about what you do, your website, the work that you put out, maybe where you're going to be speaking next, just give them an idea of what you do, where they can go, and how they can find you.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for the opportunity, Kenneth. Thank you so much for having me on. So most of the time, I'm a journalist for the New American Magazine. I'm the foreign correspondent, so I'm actually over in Europe at the moment gathering information. I'll be in Poland very soon for the UN Global Warming Summit. I try to go to as many of these as I can. So that's one of the things I do. You know, I do a lot of journalism for the New American Magazine and some other publications here and there. You can find them if you look me up. I also teach at the Freedom Project Academy. You know, back to the education thing, we went from like 20 students to almost 1,000 students in a period of just 8 years. We're trying to raise up kids who understand these things. And if people want to find more, I'm at thenewamerican.com. You can get the print magazine. If you go there, you can subscribe and you can get the daily headlines. Or you can look me up in any search engine. I'm on Twitter at @AlexNewman_JOU and at Facebook at AlexJNewman86. So people can find me there. And then if people want to reach me, my email address is normally listed at the bottom of my articles at The New American. And so thank you again, Kenneth, for having me. It's been a great pleasure, and thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time, and I appreciate you coming on the show with us today.
Hey, thank you so much, Kenneth.